Chris Kershaw tipping pitches. CJ, how does the hitter see that and take advantage?
Well, first and foremost, Chris, if it did happen, it always happens when the pitcher is in the stretch. Rarely can you pick up pitches when a guy is thrown from the windup, and that's what we saw in that seventh inning.
Alex.
Bobby.
Pitchers and catchers reported today.
Oh my God. I'm in the mood now.
Yeah. I was kind of tired. You know, it's been a long day. I took New Jersey Transit today. Yeah. You know, I'm a little exhausted. It's like 10 p.m.
Yeah, that's, we're recording late this at for 10 us. On a Monday night. Why?
But pitchers and catchers.
Yes, I'm feeling it. I'm feeling good.
Did you see Noah Syndergaard?
I did.
And his rippling muscles.
I did.
Anthony DiComo. I pulled out the rippling muscles phrase again. Yeah, you heard it. It wouldn't be tipping pitches if I didn't pull out the rippling muscles phrase. Anthony DiComo tweeted out a picture of him today and said that while he was taking the picture, Syndergaard made eye contact with him and was like, do I look, what did he say? Do I look jacked or something like that?
Do I look ripped or something like that?
And then DiComo put in his tweet, I'll let the fans decide. Obviously, he looks ripped. Obviously, he looks ripped. Okay? It's great. Everyone looks great. Everything is great. Hope springs eternal. It's beautiful.
Yeah. I think you texted me today that, like, this is beautiful because you get, like, all the beauty of, like, baseball and, like, joy without any of the pain that's about to come in the next 8 months.
No pain. This is the year.
Yeah.
That they don't have as bad of a year as last year.
It's possible, man.
It's also possible that it's a year that they have a worse year. Who knows? Anything can happen.
I feel like we should say to the listeners, actually, we have a big announcement. We're joining The Athletic. We're taking our talent to San Francisco. It's been a good run.
I didn't know where you were going with that. I was like, what are you going to tell them that I didn't agree to tell them? We're taking our talents to The Athletic. Yes, we and everybody else that covers baseball.
I saw like 5 announcements today.
Yeah.
For like a whole bunch of different teams.
Well, I'm sure that they timed it that way.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they did.
Everyone who was on baseball Twitter, The Athletic was just like, nah, we're going to steal everyone's thunder. Forget what you heard about these players. We're taking all the writers.
They have had the best offseason by far.
Yeah. They've made more additions and signings than any other team.
Than all teams combined, if we're being honest.
You mean The Athletic added more talent than John Axford going to the Blue Jays? Remember when John Axford was good?
Yeah, he was on the A's there.
Like, really good?
Yeah.
He was, like, the best closer in baseball good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, well, he...
How the mighty have fallen.
Even if he's not there, he'll always have a spot on the all-gentrification team, so...
Was he on there?
Yeah, because he had that mustache. He was, like, the... He's, like, the Wes Anderson fan, you know?
Yeah, he's seen all of Wes Anderson's films.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because he's, like, a...
And they're only called films.
Yeah, exactly. But let's get to news. We have some big stuff here.
Yeah, the biggest domino
obviously
fell, the transaction that shook the world, and that is obviously Russell Wilson being traded to the Yankees.
Boom. This is a game changer, man.
Blockbuster.
God. I was bored up until now.
MLB saw the NBA and they said, I'll raise you one. They saw the Cavs traded their entire roster and they were like, you know what? We're going to go cross sport. We're not going to take someone else's team. We're going to take another league's player.
Oh, my God.
Thoughts about this?
You know what? I think the Yankees need all the depth they can get at this point.
Do they?
Yeah, why not?
What if they bought out his football contract?
Ooh, that'd be nice.
They could do it.
They could absolutely do it. How much fun would that
be? I feel like
he's
not making a lot of money playing football.
Probably not.
Most people don't. He would make probably more money playing baseball.
Absolutely. Or maybe not. Or maybe he would get
nothing.
Who
is the Yankees' second baseman right now? They traded away their second baseman. Who is it supposed to be? Some combination of Tyler Wade and Ronald Torres?
Yeah, why
Russell
not?
Wilson could totally sneak in there.
He could absolutely do it. You don't need the range, really, for that. He's kind of a stocky guy, right? But I feel like
he could lose that.
Yeah.
He didn't used to be that stocky. He got stockier in the league. How do you think Ciara would feel about this? Ciara? That's his wife. You're looking at me like you don't know who Ciara is. Ciara.
Oh. I was thinking S-I-E-R-R.
Okay, no.
I got you.
How do you think she would feel about this?
Maybe
singer of Promiscuous Girl, Ciara. That's who we're talking about here? Ciara.
Naturally. You know, I think she stands behind him. So, I don't know.
Is Sierra more famous than Russell Wilson? Like, I know we're in sports and we know about sports and things, but if we take ourselves away from football, baseball, basketball, Twitter, is Sierra more famous than Russell Wilson? These are the questions I need to know the answer to.
6 years ago, maybe. Like, feels like she has been out of the limelight for a little while.
All right. I can respect that.
Yeah.
Either way, he's more famous than all of the Yankees' second basemen combined.
Yeah, pretty much. We get to watch him at spring training, so I'm into that.
He would quickly lose his job when they move Didi Gregorius to second base.
Naturally.
Or they move, what's his name, the big prospect who tore his ACL?
Gleyber Torres.
Yeah, that's him.
Of course.
He's listed as second on the Yankees' second base chart, depth chart.
Torres?
Yeah, Gleyber Torres.
Oh, I thought you meant Wilson. I was like, I got excited for them. I got butterflies in my stomach.
On the Yankees,
like, I'm ready.
The MLB depth chart, Russell Wilson, who is under contract to be the Seattle Seahawks quarterback, you thought he was listed second.
I was feeling myself,
We've
man.
We've been deprived from baseball
Wilson.
For too long.
I know. We need this. Just give this one to us.
Did you see, also, in quick Yankees news, just because I'm looking at their depth chart, did you see Aaron Hicks said that he's determined to be the starter in center field for the whole year and that he, like, doesn't want to lose any playing time at all? It's kind of that's a bold statement, low-key.
Yeah.
Like, with Stanton and Judge out there and Clint Frazier is coming back from injury and he was awesome before he got hurt last year, and then Brett Gardner, who's been there forever, it's kind of a bold statement. Aaron Hicks is like, No. Giancarlo Stanton, who? What?
I respect it, though.
Have you seen the video of him? We talked about that on this podcast, right?
Yeah.
That he's like as jacked or potentially more jacked than Giancarlo.
Yeah. Giancarlo just has like a foot on him.
And like a lot of baseball talent.
Yes, exactly. No, Hicks is really good, though. I mean, I would probably peg him to be the favorite right now.
One time when I was really bored at Newsday, I just compared Hicks's, like, the best part of Hicks' season before he got injured last year and Bernie Williams' career numbers, and they were kind of close. Granted, that was factoring in the last 2 years of Bernie Williams, which were really bad. He fell off of a cliff, my dude.
Yeah. You're just finding any week that, like, Aaron Hicks hits 400, and you're like, oh, my God, he's Ted Williams.
He's literally Ted Williams. Yeah, that's what I was doing. That's what boredom does. This must be what, like, hot take sports writers do.
Oh my God, absolutely. It's like names in a hat, just like,
yeah,
it's like Mad Libs.
Is Aaron Hicks the new Bernie Williams? That could have been an article. I could have wrote that. That would have got some buzz. Speaking of Giancarlo being a large, strong, beautiful man, do you see him post that picture with my boy Odell?
I did.
That was too much for me to handle in one photo.
That was
I'm supposed to hate Giancarlo and everything now because he's on the Yankees, but it's hard.
Yeah,
it's hard.
I feel like you can hate the Yankees as an entity and individually like and respect their players, you know?
Yeah, I like that method. That's the only thing that will keep me sane, because it's very hard to dislike most of them.
Yeah, it's like hating the Empire, but feeling a little sympathetic for Darth Vader, right? Like,
that's
it's
bold.
Fine. Oh, don't tell me you didn't root for Darth Vader a little bit.
Darth Vader was the one pulling the trigger on, like, several genocides. Interesting take. Complex characters, man. Complex characters.
Oh, my God. So complex.
You know who's not? The Yankees don't have complex characters. They have just normal, clean face, clean-shaven good guys.
Ugh.
Good guys. Just good guys up and down.
All right. Real news. Real news time.
Yu Darvish finally signed with the team, and it wasn't the Mets.
Yeah.
And I'm sad, because I don't know if I ever actually said this on the podcast, because I was too lazy to go back and look through all of the stupid things that I said on the podcast, but I was predicting to you almost every single day of our lives that Yu Darvish was just going to sneak in this terrible market. Sandy Alderson was going to be like, I have heard your cries, and here I am. I've brought you your savior, and it's Yu Darvish, and that didn't happen. He went to the Cubs, which are evil empire Midwest.
You would be a great, like, Mets beat reporter, just because, like, how you frame. So if you'd be like, Yu Darvish, breaking news, signed with a team that wasn't the Mets, and the Mets are really in a lot of trouble. Oh, and by the way, the team he signed with was the Cubs.
Most pertinent information obviously goes last.
Of course,
you have to keep people, you know, it's like the inverted pyramid, except not inverted. That's a journalism joke.
6 years, $126 million. How you feel?
It's actually $150 million if you ask the Cubs.
Oh.
If he wins multiple Cy Youngs.
All he has to do is win multiple Cy Youngs. It's literally not that hard.
Yeah.
His only competition is one of the greatest pitchers of all time.
And also
like
Max
it's
Scherzer.
Not that hard. Yeah.
And Noah Syndergaard.
Good God.
Wow. Okay. No. So 6 years, around $126 million. My immediate reaction was, I can't wait for all the hashtag takes from Cubs Twitter being like, we should have just signed Jake Arrieta. Jake Arrieta is so much better than you, Darvish, which they were like slightly racist takes. But never mind that fact. My immediate reaction, the Cubs are good. I don't know. Do you want me to like analyze this? Do you want some hashtag analysis?
Yeah, throw it at me. Give me a few sentences. How do you feel about this?
I don't think pitching has suddenly become the Cubs' strength, because I think a lot of their pitchers are... Their pitching staff was not great last year. That was one of the weaker aspects of their team. Their bullpen obviously fell apart in the playoffs and had a lot of injuries. But I think their lineup is where their team derives their most strength from. So if they can have an above average pitching staff, then maybe they'll get back on track to being like... They're not going to be a dynasty. That we are too quick to just assign teams as dynasties because it seems like they're going to be a dynasty and then things go wrong. But I think this makes their pitching staff above average, like well about above average, especially if Kyle Hendricks can get back to being better than he was last year. And so he replaces Jake Arrieta, which is like Jake Arrieta was not great. He was an average to below average starting pitcher last year. And is
Darvish
only,
is better.
And is only getting worse. And Darvish has the career record for K per nine. And I think a lot of the struggles that Darvish has had, aside from like injury things, have been weirdly he gets hit hard for whether it's tipping pitches or whether it's a mental thing or just really, really bad luck against really good teams. I think he's gotten a bad rap, and I think he's one of the best pitchers in the league.
Yeah, can't argue with that. It's like I was looking at something I think I saw on FanGraphs. I was reading an article that mentioned that like the Cubs have been like the worst team.
At do you read FanGraphs, bro?
Oh my God.
I'm sorry. If I would have said that, you would have said it to me. So
they've been like the worst team at developing like homegrown pitchers in like the Epstein era since like 2012. They have had like the fewest innings pitched from guys that they have like drafted and developed. So it makes sense that you just go out and get the biggest ticket pitcher on the market, right?
Yeah.
And he is. You know, unless they were going to poach Clayton Kershaw next year, like I feel like Darvish was the biggest get for them in this kind of window for them. So it's good. And, you know, like you were saying, a lot of the bad luck stuff was a lot of really small sample size, like in the World Series.
Do you know what I think, though, about some of the bad luck stuff and some of the, whether it's pitch tipping or just, I don't know if it's necessarily pitch tipping, but he kind of has an easy to time windup. Does that make sense? When I watch him pitch, it's like he goes through that slow, deliberate step back motion. And then when he delivers, he does it like he speeds up at the same time, no matter what kind of pitch it is. And I almost feel like this is all very not technical terms. And I'm sure there are technical terms for all of this that baseball writers and pitching coaches would know better than I would. But if he mixed that up sometimes in the way Johnny Cueto does, I think he has almost unhittable stuff. And I think that if he mixed up that delivery from time to time, I don't know if he's a person that can do that or if that would like totally throw him off and he would get injured or something like that. I think it would serve him really well. But also, to your point about the Epstein Cubs not being able to develop pitching, the Epstein Red Sox couldn't do it either. They went and got, during their first World Series run at least, their ace was Josh Beckett, right? And he was not developed under there. He was a Marlins player who that they went and got. So I think if we can broaden this conversation a little bit to be about the tanking, rebuilding strategy that a lot of teams seem to be going under, I think the Cubs and the Astros, teams should take a little bit more warning when the Cubs go out and do something like this, because not every small market team can go and sign Yu Darvish to paper over their starting pitching problems. All of the success that this rebuild has had, the World Series, you know, the Astros World Series, all that stuff, those things probably wouldn't have happened if they didn't have the money and the assets to go trade for Justin Verlander, or if for the Cubs, the money to go sign John Lester. You know what I mean? So you can't get everything from rebuilding and just having draft picks, which I think the Cubs continue to prove, especially with a move like this.
Yeah. And developing pitchers is hard. It's the hardest thing.
Yeah.
And I mean, all this to say also that like Darvish is still probably a little underpaid. Like he's still probably slightly better than what he got. And
he's 31 though.
I know he's 31, but like, I think it says something that he waited until February to sign, right? Like,
yeah.
I think it was a game of chicken being played by both sides, and I don't know who it was that blinked first. I assume that the Cubs kind of set their price, and they were like, well, we're not going to budge from this, and Darvish like waited for 3 months and got offers from the Twins and whoever else, and the Yankees or whatever, and was just kind of like, fine, if this is the best I'm going to get, this is the best I'm going to get.
Yeah.
But also, every team has money. The Cubs aren't even small market, right? Like, the Cubs are a big market team, and every team in theory is a big market team. Like, there's no such thing as like a small market team in terms of payroll. So like, theoretically, every team has the money to sign Yu Darvish, whether or not they actually want to admit that, right?
Yeah, of course. That's the caveat to all of these free agency conversations. I'm surprised. I guess it makes more sense now that I see what the Dodgers have done this offseason in terms of standing pat and spreading out the money, the Adrian Gonzalez trade, and to get back Matt Kemp or whatever it was. That wide, it was an even money trade, but that widened out when they would spend the money, so they have less money this year. So knowing all of that and knowing about the Dodgers' plans this offseason, I guess it doesn't surprise me that they didn't try that hard to re-sign Darvish. But last year, at the end of the year, and maybe the World Series left a sour taste in their mouth, but whatever, that's stupid if that's the case. And the Dodgers didn't get to this point thinking that way. Yeah. Maybe that's a very LA Times column thing for me to say. But I'm very surprised that they didn't at least try a little bit harder. The Dodgers could have matched that contract. And with Darvish, they're a ridiculous team. Without him, they're a ridiculous team. But with him, it's like overkill. And we said that many times last year. And during the playoffs, I said, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they just re-signed him and brought him back. After that trade happened, I was like, I wouldn't be surprised if they gave up these assets, but also they have a decent chance of re-signing him, because that would have been a destination for him anyway.
Yeah, I agree. I think that part of it is like, they have so much pitching depth already, and they have more on the way. They have reinforcements coming from AAA right now, like Walker Buehler, one of the top prospects in baseball.
Remember when the Mets had so much pitching depth already, though?
Oh my God, yeah, I know.
I mean, I'm not trying to jinx the Dodgers in any way, shape, or form, unless it helps the Mets. But that's fickle.
Yeah, I think the other aspect of that is they looked at Darvish and their current pitching staff, and they looked at the 2018 free agent class, and they were like, we would rather overspend there on Manny Machado than Yu Darvish, right? Or Bryce Harper.
They don't need Manny
Machado,
man. They don't need him. They got Justin Turner.
Justin goddamn
2018
Turner.
2018 MVP, Justin Turner. All right, let's move on. Let's talk about
a new Mets third baseman,
yes. Todd Frazier.
Oh, yeah.
The Todd father. He of Toms River, New Jersey, which is very close to New York, if you didn't know. If you hadn't seen the 1,000 times that people said, you know, he's from right outside New York and he grew up a Yankees fan. You hear to hear first, then, if you were the one person on earth who listens to baseball podcasts who didn't know that Todd Frazier was from outside New York. He's coming back home. He's coming back home, but to the Mets, which he seems sort of excited about, but not as excited as he was for the Yankees. I love this. Because I've been saying this all offseason that the Mets should sign Todd Frazier.
Yeah.
And you've been saying it for the last year and a half that they should not pretend like David Wright is just going to come back and be 2013 David Wright anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good move.
And it's cheap.
They needed it.
It's really cheap.
Like, again, they should be paying him more. Like, I'm going to say this with every single transaction. You know that, right?
Yes, I do know that.
But, yes, in terms of team value, it is very good. And Todd Frazier still has a ton of power in him and is a 2 or 3 win player. So a tick above average with, you know, 30 home runs in him. Like, the Mets will totally take that. With what they've gotten over the last, you know, couple years with, I don't know, who's been their third baseman? Like,
Wilmer
Ty
Flores.
Kelly, Wilmer Flores,
Asdrubal
Matt
Cabrera
Reynolds,
was their third baseman last year.
Asdrubal Cabrera.
Matt Reynolds, new Washington National Matt Reynolds.
Oh, the one and only. Yeah.
Loved Matt Reynolds. I wrote a piece about him in a magazine, and I was like, could he be their new shortstop? Turns out no.
Yeah, the answer was no.
Yeah, the answer was no. We got the answer. It was no. Okay, Todd Frazier. It's weird to see the Mets get, you know, it's normal that they got someone who has terrible contact skills and only hits home runs to generate offense. Totally normal thing for the Mets to do. That's all they've cared about on offense for the last decade. But now they got someone who does that but also plays defense?
Yeah.
That was a real head-scratcher.
Yeah, that was kind of weird.
I was very surprised that they paid attention to the defensive aspect of signing someone and not just Jay Bruce'd the whole situation. I'm happy with this move, needless to say. Also, Todd Frazier, sneaky looks a lot younger than he actually is, guy. I don't know if that makes sense, but when he has the helmet on, he looks very old. When he takes it off, the hairline's really nice. He's got youth in his eyes.
Yeah.
I really like it. He seems like a little kid when he plays baseball, and I like that a lot.
I love Todd Frazier. Watching him in the playoffs last year was so much fun. I still always remember there was like a line drive that was shot into the Yankees dugout, and he gets up and like has this massive smile across his face. I'm like, dude, you almost got literally killed. Why are you smiling? I would be freaking the fuck out.
I don't know if you know this. He's from Toms River, New Jersey.
Wait, okay.
Also, wait, listen. He played in the Little League World Series. He won the Little League World Series.
Wait, who was his favorite player?
I don't know.
I thought it was Derek Jeter.
Was it Derek Jeter?
Well, he got to go out and take the field with Jeter.
Oh, I didn't know this.
Yeah, dude, haven't seen that video?
No.
Of, like, Frazier running out with Jeter because, like, his team won the Little League World Series.
That's
so he got
so
to
cute.
Take the field.
I can't wait to roast
Yankee
Derek
Stadium.
Jeter in 20 minutes.
Yeah. We're getting there.
Yes, Todd Frazier still plays baseball. Like he's a little kid in the League World Series. This is SportsCenter now. Yeah. We're just doing SportsCenter bits and segments.
We're just doing it like straight faced.
He will help the Mets. He will be solid for the Mets. Hopefully he stays healthy and the third base bag is not just a cursed area at Citi Field.
I sure hope not, man.
Yeah. I hope David Wright at least gets healthy enough to like travel with the team and pinch hit this year.
That'd be nice.
That would be so nice. That would be the biggest moral boost ever. I know that means nothing statistically, but it helps me.
They should make him like a player coach sort of thing. Like, just be like, David, you're on your last legs. We know that. Just at least start teaching them stuff. I bet he already is, honestly. I bet he's kind of just taken that role upon himself.
He's
just
not
like
at spring training, though. Or if he is, I haven't seen any pictures of him.
Yeah. You know there would be a million pictures of him.
If he was at spring training?
Yeah.
It would be everywhere. Can I just say, I just want a quick ode to just spring training photos in general. They're all beautiful. They've been everywhere all over my timeline all day today. And everything is great. The skies are clear. Everyone looks happy. Jacob deGrom's haircut is perfect.
Yeah.
And I'm loving it so much. I'm very happy, if you couldn't tell.
We're feeling good.
Yeah, I'm feeling good, but the mood is about to change a little bit when we come back from break and we talk about the Tom Verducci, Derek Jeter article.
We're going to get moody here.
We're all in our feelings today on Tipping Pitches. Cool as marble, choosing bemusement over anger. Derek Jeter is playing defense from behind a desk. It's a new position for the former Yankees shortstop. Start with the desk itself. A sleek modern aircraft carrier. Is that a type of desk? Do you know desks well enough? But that's literally what he says.
You know what? It's like, it's a desk.
With much of its vast deck gone unused. I think it's just a metaphor. Jeter is behind it 5 days a week, usually starting, as on this one in January, around 7:45 a.m. That's like not that early, really.
Yeah,
it's a very hypocritical thing for me to say because I wake up at like 1 p.m. But 7:45 is like, my high school started school at 7:20. That's not that early.
Is this the new 50 Shades of Grey? This is good, man. This is getting me in the mood.
Cool as marble.
God.
All right, okay. That was the lead of the Tom Verducci article in Sports Illustrated titled "The Boss is Here, Inside Derek Jeter's Quest to Turn Around the Marlins," which this got a lot of hate on Twitter.
Tom Verducci, ghostwritten by Derek Jeter, of course.
Not even ghostwritten, just straight up, he just spoke it. And this was talk to text. The Derek Jeter interviews just went straight onto the Sports Illustrated
website.
Verducci
put his phone down. He's like, I'm going to leave you here for an hour I come back and just whatever you've said.
He just left and he was like, I don't know. I don't need to know what goes on. I just need to, you just do what you got to do and I'll leave the room. It's like Saul Goodman in Breaking Bad.
He just handed the phone to the intern and was like, write it up. And the intern's like, but, and he's like, write it.
Okay. Obviously, Tom Verducci has done some incredible work in the baseball world, in the baseball media world.
He broke the slick ball story in the playoffs.
Yes, Not probably not even in his top 20 best or most important stories, but that's what you came up with. Okay, yep. Sure. Slick ball Tom Verducci. Slick Tom. He's done some incredible work, and he's a really good writer most of the time, and he's accomplished more than either of us will ever accomplish in baseball media. He's top of the top, and he's been at Sports Illustrated and doing really good features for a long time. Okay. Yeah. All that being said, this article was trash. This was garbage.
Yeah. What is this?
I'm sorry. Like, that's harsh language, but I very much disagreed with the printing of this article. It was a Derek Jeter Marlins ownership puff piece. It was like basically the entire premise of the article was like, they sent you to hang out with Derek Jeter. And what you're going to do is you're going to tell Derek Jeter basically a synopsis of every tweet that you've seen about Derek Jeter for the last 6 months. After that, he's going to say, nope, none of that is true. And then you're going to print him saying, nope, none of that is true.
Yeah.
That's the entire article.
Yeah, Verducci was clearly, like, awed by Jeter and everything that we're going to read you some of the best parts of this because it's too good. But there are just some parts in here where I'm just scratching my head. I'm like, why is this in a magazine feature about one of the most powerful men in baseball right now and one of the people who is at the top of the headlines, you're printing stuff about how he doesn't check his phone after a certain hour or something like that because it lends insight as to the kind of GM he is and how not GM or owner.
Yeah, CEO.
CEO, but like what are we trying to get out of this?
It's fine to do a sort of personality profile of Derek Jeter. First of all, there have probably been many over the years, and they've mostly been positive because he's mostly handled the media really well. Much, you know, like LeBron does. They are able to control the media, stay out of trouble, all that stuff. But there are legitimate criticisms of Derek Jeter since his time with the Marlins, and a lot of them stem from Jeffrey Loria's time owning the Marlins. And Marlins fans and baseball fans at large are just mad at the way he's handled the transition. And that's fine. I think a lot of the Jeter, it's not slander because he's fine, but like a lot of the Jeter rhetoric has been a little bit dramatic. Like Derek Jeter is murdering old men and women down in Miami. Like, and we have talked about that even on this podcast. And we had a whole episode about it basically. Or a whole part of an episode with Lindsay Adler, now of The Athletic. But also, there is a way to write a nuanced piece that doesn't just say exactly what the front office wants you to say. And I feel like a lot of baseball writers now have just become so cozied up to the GM. And this is not just baseball in general, but the NBA does this too, where they have like their one or, you know, there are 10 sources in the GM office or the CEO's office or whatever, and they'd spin the story, and the writer thinks they're getting inside information, but really they're just getting the inside spin, and it turns out to be largely positive. There's a way to write this piece largely negative that doesn't make Derek Jeter out to be a total villain, but also makes Derek Jeter out to be someone who has been in charge of some questionable decisions since the Marlins ownership changed hands. And I think he has objectively been in charge of some questionable decisions.
It's why access journalism as a whole is so ridiculous because, like you were saying, these guys think they're privy to this like inside knowledge, but they're just getting fed a lot of PR BS, to put it lightly. And
there's a whole part of this article where he just details an event, a dinner for investors or something, where Jeter just walks around and he basically just says, Jeter was incredible. He was winging it. He was doing this, this, and that. He's so smooth. He has
he looks like
gait.
DiMaggio here.
Yeah. Well, it's like, that's not...
That doesn't...
Okay,
that
maybe,
doesn't...
Like, maybe that is your observation. Maybe that's some color that you throw in. But you don't do it this way. You don't do it this way.
The point is, like, he's taking a lot of what Jeter is saying at face value. Jeter is by far the most heavily quoted person in the article. I mean, it's like 80-20 with, like, Jeter and everyone else. What was, like, there's nothing to balance it out. I know that, like, you know, journalists, in theory, are supposed to be quote-unquote objective, even though that's never the case. But, like, you can at least strip a lot of the puffed up stuff that Jeter is telling you and be like, all right, like, what are we actually getting at? Is there any coherent ideology in what Jeter is telling me? Or does he really just have no idea what he's doing and he's just telling me what I want to hear? And I think for the most part, he was just telling Verducci what he wanted to hear. And Verducci,
Printed it.
Ate it right up.
There's a paragraph that starts, "He walks to the podium with that unmistakable gait, slightly bow-legged and as erect as if wearing a crown. He has notes in front of him to remind him of the topics he wants to address, but he otherwise wings it superbly. He promises season ticket holders are part of, quote, an exclusive club, and you will be treated accordingly." What? What club is that? The club where if you pay a lot of money, you get to see baseball games?
Yeah, what?
That, like, they're not being treated accordingly. There's a part in the article where he says, where Verducci brings up, a lot of people felt that allowing... No, it was in the Effectively Wild episode where they had the Marlins preview. I guess it was the Miami Herald Marlins reporter or someone like that. I apologize for not knowing the name off the top of my head. I don't know every beat reporter for every newspaper, for every team. But he...
Navigates to theathletic.com just to see who he is.
No, he was saying that someone had proposed to Jeter that... you know, maybe kids should be allowed in for free for the first couple of years because you've traded away all the stars. You live, you play baseball in a terrible park, and you're basically stealing money, taxpayer money, to have this stadium that is terrible that no one likes. So an incentivizing thing might be let kids in for free, and the parents will still have to pay, and so you'll make your money that way. Or you could even do that for, like, Friday games, weekend games, whatever it might be. Let kids in for free. And Jeter, like, adamantly said no. And his reporting bared all that out. Like, no one denied the fact that Jeter was like, I don't want that to happen. I want everyone to pay. And things like that don't get brought up in this article. And it's just, it's frustrating because Verducci largely just prints Jeter's denials of all of those accusations and doesn't explain the accusations or the reporting. They're not even all accusations. They're just, some of it is just well-reported sourced stories that say Jeter is making $5 million a year. And there are literally quotes in here that say from Jeter, what are they saying I'm making? $5 million? No, it's not that. He doesn't say what
no,
it is.
There's no follow-up.
He's just, nope, it's not that. But that's not, there was a way to write this article objectively, quote-unquote objectively, and this was not it.
There's this, it's funny you bring up that, the kids anecdote, because there's a part in here where Verducci, early on in the article, attempts to in some way explain what Jeter's supposed plan is, and he splits it up to the business side and the baseball side. And the business side is actually the one that I think catches my attention the most, because he says, on the business side, Jeter's reaching out to the community in ways that Loria never did. Listen to see if any of these things say reaching out to the community to you. He's turning Marlins Park into an entertainment venue beyond the Marlins' 81 home dates. Monster truck rallies and craft beer festivals are already scheduled. He will explore selling naming rights to the ballpark. And then he hopes to attract more fans with music and a festival atmosphere at ballgames, whatever that means. And he wants to double his TV deal. What is the average Marlins fan? Why are they like, oh, you're selling naming rights? Dope, man. Thanks. Now I know you're really in it for us. Like, what? Like, I understand in theory, it's like you want to bring in revenue so you can put a better product on the ballpark. But later on in that article, that anecdote that you mentioned about this, this like dinner that he's hosting at the ballpark is like, that's Verducci's prime example of how he's reaching out to the community. And it's all CEOs, it's all investors and season ticket holders. And it's like, what does the average fan care at all about any of this stuff that Jeter is selling you to you right now, when he has really just sold off your entire team and said, sorry, it'll get better down the road, with no inclination that it will?
Yeah, not only with no inclination that it will, but the whole plan is like, we are $400 million in debt. If I had a fucking dollar for every time I've seen reported or said from the Marlins organization or leaked from a source that they're $400 million in debt, I'd be able to pay their fucking debt off. They keep saying this is the reason that they're trading away all their stars. They're trading away Giancarlo Stanton. And Verducci even says, he says that he asked Jeter, you know, why didn't you just add a couple starting pitchers on the market? You are already spending this much money. Why don't you just spend a little more? You had one of the best lineups in baseball. And Jeter is basically just like, no, that won't work. That wouldn't have worked. That's just a short-term fix. What? All of life is a short-term fix. All of baseball is a short-term fix. All these players get bad. Okay, you only have Giancarlo Stanton, Marcelo Zuna, and Christian Yelich in your outfield once in your time as CEO. You're not going to get another outfield that has three young players that are that good by trading for three young prospects that are that good. That's not going to happen, okay, first of all. Second of all, the whole point that the Marlins were sold was because they were $400 million in debt under Jeffrey Loria, and they are ripping off the city, and they are ripping off the fans. So, they were sold to someone who could handle $400 million of debt. And the MLB has said multiple times, Bruce Sherman is a very wealthy man. He can handle the debt. Okay, he's a wealthy man. Great. Why are they cutting so much money then? Why do they need to save so much money if he's a wealthy man who could handle the $400 million of debt? They're not actually operating $400 million in debt. They're making a lot of money. They're just paying all of it to Bruce Sherman and to the owners and to the CEOs and to not the players, not the fans. The players and the fans are the two groups in this equation who are not getting the money. How many times do I need to read that they're $400 million in debt? And also talk out of one side of your mouth saying they're $400 million in debt and talk out of the other side saying Bruce Sherman is really rich. So does he not have $400 million? I'm not saying that he should just write a check for $400 million to the Marlins organization. But the whole point of getting a new owner is so that even though there is that debt, they don't have to operate like there is that debt, right? That was the whole point of selling the team, being forced to sell the team. After all these years of Loria basically being like, give me all of your money, Miami. Give it to me. Just, I want it. And I'm going to say I have all of this debt as an organization, but personally, I'm going to continue to get rich as fuck. I don't get it. I don't get why you would write a piece that basically just Jeter's like, no, it's fine. All of it is good. No, we're all good here. Okay, the part that baffles me the most is the part where in the article, Verducci brings up Jeter's investment of the team and how he wanted to be their quote-unquote control person, whatever that means, which is like, you're the owner. You are labeled as the public owner of the team, right?
Which he already is, for the record. Like, everyone thinks of Jeter as the public-facing owner. That's really the only reason they brought him in, but, like, that's beside the point.
He says, in parentheses, reports have pegged Jeter's investment at $25 million. And then he gives a quote from Jeter that says, I keep hearing about my, quote, modest investment, Jeter says. I wish that were the case. One, it's not small. And two, that's not accurate, no. According to a source familiar with the deal, Jeter is the sixth largest shareholder in the Marlins, contributing slightly less than 5% of the equity, or $37.9 million. Asked to confirm that number, Jeter says, oh, it went up? Before, it was 25. It's higher than 25. First of all, that doesn't tell me anything. You didn't confirm if it was actually 38. Second of all, I don't care if it's $38 million or $25 million. I don't care if you're a 5% equity holder or if you're a 6% equity holder or if you're a 69% equity holder. It does not matter to me at all. You are still the face of this team and you still made all these decisions. He didn't deny any of it. It doesn't matter whether one really rich guy owns most of the team or another really rich guy owns most of the team. Guess what? Really rich guys own most of the team and they're all going to come out of this still really rich. No one is going to be bankrupt from this except the Marlins fans. They are going to be bankrupt of a good team for a long time.
There's a part in there where Verducci references the town hall that Jeter hosted with fans, and like there was some interaction that he had with the fan where the guy was like, just go sign players, and Jeter was like, who? And the guy didn't have an answer, and Verducci was like, well, why don't you sign Darvish and Arrieta? And Jeter's response wasn't even, yeah, we just really don't have the capital for that. He's like, nah, they wouldn't have helped. Nah, we still wouldn't have won with them.
And it's that's the part that I was trying to bring up earlier.
It's like, what? That makes no sense.
You're right, yeah. Getting Darvish and Arrieta when your best pitcher last year was Dan Straley is not going to help you. Yet, in this article, he claims to be an analytics guy. He wishes he could take more analytics 101 classes. That is his quote.
Yeah.
Oh, but he can't figure out that adding Darvish and Arrieta would make him better than having Jose Urena and Dan Straley as your aces? Whoa, burning down the house right there. Dan Straley, look alive for that 91-mile-an-hour fastball with a little bit of tail.
All right, there is a good anecdote in here that I got to give Verducci credit for because it does give a little insight into how Jeter works. So it says, later that night, as Jeter's getting ready for bed, his phone buzzes with a message from Jason Latimer, his VP of Communications and Outreach. It includes a link to a story that just broke about Yelich's agent lobbying for a trade. Jeter puts the phone down without opening the link and goes to bed. Quote, I try when I get home to stay off my phone after certain hours, he says. He does not open the link until the next morning, and only after he cuddles with his daughter. Quote, my wife and I race in there in the morning to see who can get there first when she starts crying a little bit and then starts smiling, says Jeter. It's the best part of my day.
That's nice. Man. Well, that really helps Marlins fans.
Yeah, actually, that gives me a lot of hope that there's going to be a formidable team out there in 5 years. That makes me, I'm going to sleep at night knowing that Jeter sleeps well at night not checking his phone.
You can write a profile about the personality of Derek Jeter, but that's not what this was. You know what I mean? Because they talk too much about the team and about the finances. And it is my opinion that you can't write a profile of Derek Jeter without addressing this stuff right now. But if you're going to put stuff in like that, if you're going to put he runs into his daughter's room and hugs her because he's a great person in there, you know, being a great family man does not make you a good owner. It's great that he's a good family man and he cuddles with his daughter. I love that. That's fantastic. Okay. But that doesn't mean that he's doing the right things for the team. And this article was supposed to be about, is he doing the right things for the team? Those two, there's no correlation there at all.
Yeah, Verducci saw all the A-Rod, like, redemption articles that came out a few years back when he was kind of making his comeback and was like, I just want to do that. Because all of those were fine because they were profiles of this person who had become very loathed among a lot of people and was trying to rehab his image in the media and did it incredibly successfully. And we all love A-Rod. And Verducci was like, you know what? I'm going to do that for my boy Jeter. But everyone is like, but the team's still bad and there's still no money coming in. And what the hell is going to happen in 2022? I don't know. Do you know? Nope. Do you know after reading this article?
I don't.
I have no idea.
Yes. I don't know anything about the plan because when he asked him about the plan, Jeter said, the plan's changed. And Verducci was like, I.
Well, in fairness, Jeter does say, we believe we can turn this thing around. So that's really all I needed to hear from the face of the organization.
Mic drop. Wait, do you know how they're going to turn it around? Ready for this paragraph. On the baseball side, he wants a team that plays, quote, the right way. Looks professional. Quote, well-groomed is the best way to put it, he says when asked about a facial hair policy, which is obviously a nod to the Yankees' facial hair policy, which is stupid.
Yeah.
And from the lowest level of the minors to the majors, emphasizes winning. All of which more than suggests a team in his image. Wait. He wanted to win? Other baseball players don't want to win, but he wanted to win.
Oh.
And also, later on, he goes to say that they're going to rebuild the right way, which is, you know, putting an emphasis on the farm system.
Wow.
Is that what it takes?
This is Moneyball 2.0 right here.
Wait, he's reinventing the game.
Oh, my God.
Farhan Zaid, who? Theo, who? We got to emphasize the farm system.
The kicker to this piece is Ralph Aguilar, an architect from Miami, walked up to Jeter. This is at that dinner. He says, I hope you're as good an owner as you were a shortstop. Jeter smiled and said, better.
Oh, wonderful.
Oh.
He's just going to be better.
He's just better.
He's just better. He's just good at this, man.
He knows what to do.
Yeah, he's never going to apologize for believing in Miami.
I get that all of this sounds like you and I are just two snot-nosed journalism students from NYU who are like, oh, I could write the best piece ever about Derek Jeter, and then fuck the Marlins, all this different. Marlins are terrible, okay?
I took investigating journalism 101.
I understand that this is what this sounds like, you know, criticizing Tom Verducci, who's a very accomplished journalist who's probably won several awards, more than either of us will ever win. But I put that caveat at the beginning, okay? That's fine. But I would criticize this piece if it was written by Barstool or ESPN or anyone else. It's just, I genuinely believe that Derek Jeter is, and the Marlins ownership are acting in bad faith as owners of this team, much in the same way that Jeffrey Loria did. And anyone who just lets people at the top of baseball organizations who are acting in bad faith just deny it and get a lot of space to do that, I don't think that's okay, and I don't think that we can have a podcast and not say that.
Yeah, and, you know, honestly, I think Jeter has probably gotten slightly more heat than he personally deserved. I mean, they really did bring him in so that he could just take this heat, and frankly, he's probably not getting paid enough for how much he has gotten shit on over the last 3 or 4 months.
No way. He's making more than $5 million
a
year.
I'm kidding. But at the same time, he has not shown that he deserves this. Why does he, okay, if you think that he's maybe getting ragged on a little too hard, fine. But Verducci just did the full 180 and was like, I'm going to give you 3,000 words on why you are literally Saint Derek Jeter. And I'm sorry, but he just hasn't shown that he has given any goodwill towards the fans and shown that he deserves this kind of, like you said, puff piece.
Yeah. the dreaded puff piece label.
Yeah.
I will say, this could all work. You know, like the Marlins could just cut payroll, be terrible, stumble into a bunch of good players, and just so happens that they all come up at the same time, and it could work. But that doesn't mean that this process was the right process. I believe that the Marlins should try to be bad. I believe that if they were going to commit to this and not spend and sign Arrieta and Yu Darvish, then this is the path that they should go. But at least, like, don't act like what you're doing is revolutionizing baseball when really what you're doing is just trying to save money. Like, I know you can't come out and say that, but don't so blatantly deny it like this.
Yeah, that's the thing that gets taken out of the equation.
Marlins
a lot,
fans aren't
like,
stupid.
It's like there are actual fans of this baseball team who care about this, rightfully or wrongfully. It's stupid. Baseball is really stupid, but a lot of people actually care about it. And so at least pretend that you recognize that a lot of people invest themselves in this sort of thing. And I don't think it helped that like Jeter basically skirted the media for months after coming on board until he's finally like, okay, I guess I'll give an interview and do this town hall after getting absolutely crushed by everyone for all these awful moves. Just because, I don't know, people just want to know that like they're actually being heard, right? And that you care about their input and what they're feeling.
Yeah. All right. Anything else to yell about? Do we want to just completely do another full takedown of Tom Verducci?
You know what I will say, honestly, before we move on from this, is that the A's have not been going through a similar thing per se, but like they're looking for this new ballpark and the team's not very good, obviously. And they have, with the kind of change in ownership over the last year or so, they've brought out Dave Cavall, who's the president of the A's, and he's basically been going, he holds office hours on a weekly basis where fans can come in and give them their ideas. And he's been, you know, he walks around the ballpark and he goes to the games and he does all this. And it feels like you're actually being heard. Is it true? Are the fans actually being heard? Probably not. But like, at least make us feel like,
maybe they're not being heard in terms of like, we want you to sign a bunch of players. Don't trade Yonder Alonso, all that kind of stuff. Maybe they're not being heard in that sense. But
I want a new ballpark on my block, Mr. Cavall.
Yes, okay, maybe they're not being heard in that sense because that's just not realistic. Snowflakes. But they are being heard in the sense that how many promotions have we seen on Twitter or have you bought into where you pay $10 and you get tickets to home games for a month?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that the Marlins won't bring something out like that, but at the very first sign of something like that, kids come to the ballpark free over the summer. Derek Jeter was like, nope, everybody pays. Everybody pays to see this product.
Yeah.
Which is like your best player is, I don't know, JT Realmuto, who does not want to be on the team. Like, I'm sorry, but if your best player is a catcher who's like worth three wins, I don't know, man.
Yeah.
Kids can go for free at least.
It's rough. We got to bring a Marlins fan on one of these days just to have them and just like let them have the podcast.
Do you know a Marlins fan?
Pull a Tom Verducci, just give him the microphone and walk out of the room. Just be like, just go, man. Just talk.
Do you know any Marlins fans?
I don't know a single one. Yo, hit us up on Twitter. All right. Well, we've had some good rants over the last couple weeks. It's been good to get out of our system.
Yeah, that was a freaking... I felt like Mike Francesa right there for a minute.
We're ready for baseball to start, if you haven't noticed. Sometimes I think that I'm a horseshoe crab. I don't have anything in common with myself, except that I came from the sea.
So, those of us who subscribe to notifications from the MLB at Bat app got a fun notification today about a story about Giancarlo Stanton and AJ Ramos, who are Yankees and Mets players, respectively, but used to play for none other than the Miami Marlins.
Ooh, we're bringing it full circle here.
Basically, they wrote a story about how they're rooming together in New York now that they're both living in the same city because they used to room together in Miami when they were playing on the same team. And it's just a fun little story. Like, they came to a new city and they're both new on their respective teams, newish. And now they're living together and it's going to be like a little sibling rivalry going on in that apartment. Do you have thoughts about this? Would you, the Subway Series carpool? Is that, it's going to be one of those situations? Are they going to share the Uber or what?
Yeah.
Split that Uber price?
The Uber pool. Yeah, that's fun. I imagine them coming home after a long day, and they like plop down on the couch next to each other, and they're like, how was your game? And Stanton's like, I struck out 4 times. And and Stanton's like, how was your game? And Ramos is like, I struck out 4 guys, so like I was pretty good. And like Stanton goes off and like pouts to his room and stuff. But then they come out and like watch Breaking Bad together.
Breaking Bad, the only TV show that exists according to our podcast.
Yep.
I think it's fun. I think it's like, it's very Little League. Like when I would play against my friends in the Little League, after the Subways, it'll be a very Subway Series, it'll be a very Little League thing. Like when I would play against my friends in in-house baseball, Little League, we would play and we would get mad at each other during the game, and then we would like get ice cream together afterwards. So maybe we could do a little buddy show. We can pitch this when we're pitching all of our dozen reality shows. We pitch this as a buddy show. You know, the roommates, I'm sure this, several people have already been like, this would make a great TV show.
I'm sure, but ours is still the best idea, obviously.
So in honor of this, we're each going to pick a player that we want to room with the most out of the entire MLB. So I'll just kick it off. I think my guy is Javi Baez.
Nice.
Because not only is Javi Baez similar in age to us, there were a couple guys that went through my head, like, I would love to live with Curtis Granderson. I think it would be cool to live with CC Sabathia. But realistically, like, these guys are almost old enough to be, like, my dad. Or at least, like, a very, like, an uncle or something. Not that they would judge me or anything like that, but just people of different ages and generations have different interests. So I wanted to go with Javi Baez, who is much closer in age to us, and by all accounts seems like the most fun person literally on earth. I don't know, something about that energy in that middle infield. He hasn't been everything that we thought he might be baseball-wise, but personality-wise, he's been one of my favorite players to watch. And he plays the game in the exact opposite way from what Jeter described, the right way, the well-groomed way.
Yeah.
In the Verducci article. And I love that. So Javi Baez would be my roommate. I didn't go with a Mets player. I didn't go with a homer.
Damn. Hashtag rare.
I'm coming out of my cage.
Yeah, that would be fun. I would like to just hang around the house with him. I imagine he like does everything that he does in baseball games. Like he does the same things at home. Like if you ask him to put something down, he like slaps it down like on
slaps like, down a nice tag. He runs around the kitchen and just slides.
Yep.
He plays. Does everything with such flair. Can you imagine what it'd be like if he's cooking?
Oh my god!
A little
yeah.
flick of the wrist of the tag.
You ask him for a soda from across the room, and he just like flips one to you.
I also feel like he always wears eye black.
Yeah,
it's just always on his face. He's like gets out of the shower, and I'm like, how is it still on your face? Is it just tattooed on there? He definitely is one of those baseball players that always wears a hat too.
Yeah,
and he never takes that hat off.
And yeah.
Like when he's in a good mood, he just flips it backwards, and he's in a normal mood, he just flips it forward. All right, who's your guy?
I actually don't know if this one counts because I don't know if he's playing this season. I don't know if he's signed with the team right now.
You picked a bum on me.
But I'm going to go with my boy John Jaso.
Okay.
he was a member of the All Gentrification team, as some of you OG listeners might remember. But there was also a piece of news that came out about him over the weekend. And where a former guest of ours, Fernando Perez, tweeted out, they're best buds, Perez and Jaso, and he tweeted out a picture of a text that he had gotten from Jaso. You can just read it out.
Fernando Perez, still using iOS 10, though. Mad respect, my guy.
Yeah, I do.
He just held out on that update. It says, the text message is from John fucking Jaso. We've also just... For the record, we've just become effectively well. They did this.
They read this
out loud. And the text message says, quote, "We are the custodians of life's meaning." And then it's just attributed to Carl Sagan.
Can you imagine just get like you're just going to wake up to that every day. He's just going to like throw facts at you.
If you live with more people, there you have like a roomie group chat, and he's just blowing it up with messages like this.
Yeah. You're trying to pick dinner plans, and he's like, what does it even mean to eat? And you're like, all right, John.
Conversation is the food of the
soul.
Do
you want to go to Dos Toros or not, bro?
We are the custodians of life's meaning. And then the next message that comes is like a picture of the dirty bathroom. Whose turn is it to clean this? He seems like he'd be a fun guy to live with, although it would be a lot. It'd be a lot.
It would be a lot. But you know what? I feel like he's the kind of guy who would like pick me up after I had a bad day. I'd come home and just be like, oh my God, awful, you know, like shit happened at work, like X, Y, and Z happened. He'd be like, hey man, let's just like chat about it, you know? And like, what's your chakra feeling like? And I'm like, all right, bro. Yeah, light me some incense. I gotta get this out of me right now.
This is like the kind of roommate who has seen every single Netflix documentary, but you don't know when he saw them. Like, you've never seen him watching one, but he's just seen them all. Yeah. So he just, like, never sleeps. He's like a robot. He stays up in the middle of the night, and he watches, like, the Dalai Lama documentary.
Sound like Mississippi sippy cup. Baby turn bibby up. Henny invented the catalyst for happiness in my cup. This sound like kiddies on the playground. Mama was running.
All right, so before we go, we want to do one little thing because it is Valentine's Day today. If you're listening to this on the day that it comes out, it will be Valentine's Day. So we just wanted to give a little shout out to our favorite power couples out there in the MLB, the ones who bring us joy every day, watching them go about their business on and off the field.
A lot of these ended up just being second baseman, shortstop pairings, but yep. You know, Jose Altuve and Carlos Correa.
Yes, love.
Javi Baez and everybody, including me, if I become his roommate.
Adrian Beltre and Elvis Andrus, who the best love-hate relationship out there. I just want a reality show of them. I'm not kidding. I just want to see them interact.
Noah Syndergaard and Mr. Met.
Ooh, good one. Yeah.
Stealing Mrs. Met's Valentine.
Yeah, that's a little bittersweet there.
That's a love-hate relationship. You want to talk about love-hate relationship?
Yeah.
Obviously, Giancarlo and AJ Ramos now that we know that they're best friends and they live together.
True. Those guys are great.
There's the Jay Bruce, Michael Conforto bromance.
Of course.
That goes on. Yeah, for whatever reason, I've never seen a picture of the two of them together, but every time some reporter or the Met sideline, the SNY guys are asking Michael Conforto, who has been a very influential Met. He says Jay Bruce. It's the first name out of his mouth every time. And I'm just like, you guys just like pounded Natty Lights together? And like that was the beginning of the bromance? I don't know.
Francisco Lindor and that entire infield with like Jason Kipnis and Carlos Santana. Those guys are nice together. I like them. I love them. How fun would it be to be an Indians fan? I was just thinking about that.
Yeah.
Remember when they won 22 games in a row? They just didn't lose for a month.
How about Joey Votto and Paper Airplanes? Joey Votto and Zach Cozart is a good one for real, though.
Yeah, that is a good one.
All right, last one. I want to finish it up. Gary, Keith, and Ron, the Mets announcing booth.
Yeah, true.
That is the best Valentine's baseball bromance that we could possibly think of.
Yeah, they're cute.
If we missed any, let us know because we probably missed a lot. We probably missed the one from your favorite team.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. How about Matt and Matt from the A's? There you go.
Yeah.
They have the same name.
Matt and
Matt. How could they not love each other?
They're basically soulmates at this point.
Baseball soulmates. All right. Thanks for listening, y'all. Check back in next week. We have some really fun episodes coming up in the next couple weeks. So make sure you're subscribed. Make sure you rate and review us on iTunes. And share it with your friends.
Yeah, and if you have any ideas or questions or comments or whatever, shoot us an email, tippingpitchespod@gmail.com, or slide into our DMs. We like it when you guys do that. You've been doing that more, and it's really nice.
Yeah,
it
we makes just got us our 700th wanted. Follower on Twitter today.
Shout out to whoever that was.
Yeah, big ups. I mean, it was Tom Verducci, we're sorry.
I mean, shouts out to all 698 followers, like 10 of whom are listening to this. And then obviously the other two are you and me.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks, everyone.